See, before I get started, I just give you a little bit of my own background. I come as with lots of struggles and ups and downs and that happened in my own life. I grew up on a farm in Alberta. I come from the Dutch background. If you heard of the Dutch, some of them are stubborn, maybe a little bit similar to the Chinese. I was also a bit prejudiced. And if you're not Dutch, you're not much. Have you ever heard that before? And of course, the Dutch always like to say, we go for Dutch treat, right? You know what that means. We like other people to pay, not us, for everything. So I come from that background. My parents came from Holland when I was 3 years old. And I look at the young people here today, and I look at my own life when I was a teenager, struggling to know if God was real, struggling to know if the church was real. I had many questions. I had many negative things because the Dutch always like to fight, and they always like to fight over small issues. And we always were looking for the perfect church, looking for the perfect church. My parents moved 4 times to find the perfect church. It was in Holland, really. That's what they would compare it to, where no one could smile on Sunday, and everyone had to follow rules and regulations, and they called the church I came from the Black Stocking Church. And so really, what happened in that church is that they lost all their young people, because no one could smile, no one could be happy. It was a very serious affair. And so that is the negative part of my background. And I struggled also when I started to realize that Christ loved me and he saved me. Then I really struggled, how was I going to impact this world for Christ? God had made me for a reason, to share the gospel. And I was a failure. I went to Bible school to learn how to overcome my fears and how to be a witness for Jesus at Prairie Bible College, Three Hills, Alberta. That's where I went. And then I heard about the fact that we have to do evangelism at Christmas time in Alberta, 20-40 below zero. And I remember going, and that was my assignment. I went back to Bible school, and I had failed in my assignment because the first person that I tried to give a tract to, he cursed me, and he threw the tract on the street. And the next person, because I come from Lacombe, Red Deer area, he smiled. I thought he recognized me, so the tract went back in my pocket. I was so afraid. And then I heard about Operation Mobilization. And there were a bunch of young people that were on fire for Jesus and wanted to change the world for Christ. And I said, well, what are the qualifications? That's why I didn't want to be a missionary, because I felt we have to be so qualified. We have to learn these languages and we have to trust God. And they said, well, the first qualification is that we take failures. I said, what? I think I'm joining right away. And so I joined for 1 summer with Operation Mobilization to go to Belgium, and that became the part of my life for 18 years. And went to India, traveled overland 10,000 kilometers in 1968. And I had lots of fears of hot food, fears of, what would happen along the way. I had many fears. And then halfway to India, I heard India had no toilet paper. That just about stopped me in my tracks, but I was halfway to India, so I couldn't go back. And then I feared that I might never get married, because that was a fear I had when I was 14 years old, that I might never get married. I come from a pig farm. Who's going to marry a pig farmer? My hands were always smelling with pig smell. I couldn't, it was just, so I had that big fear. And I was already 22 when I was going to India, and I'd be maybe almost 25 when I got back, or 24. And then there'd be no Canadians left for me. All the girls would be married by the time I got back. But I had learned to put these fears into God's hands. And somehow I went there to experience God and to find God, to work for God. And God used me in those years, and he just a simple failure from a simple farming background. He used me in India, and I was working with a guy called Brother Buck Singh. And this man from India was a man that was a Sikh who used to be an international student in Canada. But then when he grew up in India, he hated Christians so much, he was taught that. But he went to a mission school because it was the best school around. When he was given his first New Testament or Bible, he burnt it. He kept the cover because it was expensive. But he burnt the he hated Christians. And when he went to Canada, his parents were hoping he would stay true to the Sikh faith. But there in Canada, a family from Winnipeg looked at this lonely student from India, and he needed a place to stay, and they opened their home to him. A white Caucasian family. And through that family, he started to read the Bible again. And this time he read the whole Bible three times in about 6 weeks, cover to cover. God had opened his heart, made him hungry for God. And he became a Christian, got baptized in Vancouver here in the Pacific Ocean, went back to India to preach the gospel, started 6,000 churches in India. And so I worked with this man, and I was touched by his life. And they have in India 5-hour church services. And I decided that if I was going to get married, I wanted to get married in India, but I needed a girlfriend first. And the girl did write to me from Prairie Bible College that she was praying for India and wanted to know what I was doing. I didn't even know who she was, but I wrote back and was attracted by her handwriting. And I asked if she could be my friend. 4 letters later, I proposed to her. I said, if you want to come to India, you can marry me. Otherwise, I wanted to marry in India. And she said, yes. Crazy, isn't it? She decided to come to India to marry me. And that happened, what should I say, next month, 47 years ago. Still married. Same person. And we had a small wedding. 2,000 people showed up for the wedding. If you invite someone to India in your wedding, they invite their cousins and uncles and aunts. And so it was just so awesome that my parents would come, and my mother was baptized in the land of India. Changed my parents, who were so stubborn, and they didn't have a clue of what I was doing, but God turned their lives around as well. So this is just a little part of my own story, how God changed me. And India was part of that. And so I came back from India. We were part of the work of OM in Ontario as Canadian directors, and then later on we became workers at Prairie Bible College in evangelism. I just think of the Winter Games in Korea. In 1988, those Winter Games were in Calgary, and I was part of that, leading 170 students from Prairie Bible College on the streets of Calgary, serving hot coffee and chocolate. I had a team at the airport. We did drama. We had a Chinese team serving Chinese food at the Olympic food court. We had a lot of things going on in Calgary that time. I just think of maybe even Christians today that are sharing their faith in Korea, using the Olympics as the venue. And so I was part of that, and then I got into church planting a bit and leading the work in Kamloops with street people. And then the Lord opened my eyes to the needs of international students in the year 2001. I was in Kamloops. And I had no idea that Kamloops was being flooded with international students from all over the world. And God had to open my eyes again to see that if I was available and willing to start a new ministry in 2001. And one of the first groups of churches that helped me start was the Chinese church in Kamloops. And others, they helped me to get this work going in Kamloops. And then in the year 2010, we moved to Vancouver to start ministry in UBC and SFU and these other universities. And that's what I'm doing today. We've been working here in Vancouver for the last 7 years. And you heard John Cutterford maybe a month ago speak and share here about what God is doing at UBC. So just before I start this message from John 9, I have a little prize, a couple of prizes here for you, just to test your intelligence about international students. I had no idea that so many students from mainland China were coming here to Kamloops, of all places, because it's cheaper there, and their parents, it's more sun there, and their parents think that they're farther away from all the bad influence in Vancouver. So that's where that started with one student from China in the year 1993 or so, and then the next year that Chinese student told his friend, and then there was two, and then soon half of the international body were from China. I didn't know. Okay, but the next country that has the largest percentage of international students is? Who said it? Who said that? You did? Okay, you got this book for Buck's sake. Great, come on up. Okay. India, 14%. So in India and China, there's about 15% of all the international students.
Thank you.
I give you. Be blessed by this great man of God. He was something like Watchman Nee. Okay, two more gifts. Okay, how many international students are in Canada? Approximately. How many? A little harder. Huh? Just give me some numbers. Huh? 200,000. Okay, let's have another number. Closer. Let's get closer. Huh? Come on now. 150. Higher. Getting closer. Huh? And I'm dying for a glass of water, brother. Okay, so that gives you some. And actually, last night I was with an international student meeting with Douglas, where there's many international students, probably from Vietnam, over 100 of them. It's a communist country. And you know, last night one girl, I had been praying for her. She just came to Canada just a few months ago, and she's living in a Christian home. I've been praying for her. Her name is Quinn. And that. A month ago, I said, are you ready to accept Christ? And she said, no, I'm not ready. How do you become a Christian? So I shared 10 minutes, 15 minutes with her. And last night, I saw her again. And I said, I heard some news about you. She said, yes, last Thursday, I gave my life to Jesus. I gave my life to Jesus. A girl from Vietnam, never heard the gospel before, but she is following Jesus and part of our club. And Douglas College. Let's praise the Lord. Amen. It's wonderful to see. So this morning, my heart is touched. By the way, we have some literature from International Student Ministry and my own newsletter on the back on the table and a couple more books. You should give donations for them, though, the books, but the literature is free. And this morning I want to move from human thinking to divine motivation. If we want to really be like Jesus and to be part of his work and his will in our lives, then we will have to, this message can change your life. It has changed my life. And we need to move from human thinking. It's a big problem, human thinking. There's nothing we can do. I'm too old. Well, you know how old I am now? 73 this year. 73. Picked up some students from China. They were coming here for English camp. They were in the middle school students. I said, you're learning English? Yeah, we're learning English. I said, how old am I? Oh, you must be 50. No, one kid said, you must be 45. No, one kid said, you must be 43. I said, thank you so much. I'm 73 this year. Been over 50 years in service of God, and I give him all the praise and the glory that he has given me strength. Many students said, where do you get your energy from? And they have a hard time keeping up to me. I bike and I hike and do a lot of exercises. So, but how are we going to become like Jesus? We must be transferred with the renewing of our mind. The second slide we have is when fishermen don't fish. When fishermen don't fish. It's an illustration from the book of Max Licato, In the Eye of the Storm, about a time when his friend and his dad went fishing during the spring break. They went to the lake and set their camper expecting to fish the next day. However, during the night, the weather got so bad they could not fish. No problem, they could play games and talk and have fun, and tomorrow they could fish. The next day, the weather was even worse. They tried playing games and telling jokes, but the jokes weren't so funny, and his friend's socks began to stink. The next day, the day seemed even longer. By the third day, when the weather had not improved, they were all very grumpy. His friend was a jerk, and his dad could not do anything right. They sat in misery all day. Day four was even colder, and when his dad said they should go home, nobody objected. Max Licato learned a valuable lesson, not about fishing, but about people. When those who are called to fish don't fish, they fight. They fight. And that's what we used to do. That's my background. The Dutch fight. We fought, and even in Bible school, we fought over small doctrines and of what we could do and not do on Sunday. We fought. Two Dutchmen make one church, three Dutchmen make two churches. That's how they fight. If the minister bought a television set, we knew he was out of God's will, so we moved to another church. That's right. We actually did that. And so that was my background, is fighting and seeing the church that was full of division and hypocrisy. And so, but in the next slide, we're going into John chapter 9, which we read this morning about what God is trying to say to us. And the first thing we notice here, there is a situation. John chapter 9, the situation. What is the situation? There's a blind man from birth. There's a blind man there. He was physically blind. Disciples said, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? This world is filled with tragedy. I lived in India. I saw a lot of blind people and people that were lepers and people that were poor. I've been on the streets of Hastings working, seeing the homeless. We have tragedy everywhere. Poverty, disease, we have these tragedies. You don't have to look very far to see a world that's filled with tragedy. So physically, there's a lot of tragedy. But the greatest tragedy is spiritual. The man was also spiritually blind, and the whole chapter deals with this man's spiritual blindness after he was healed from his physical blindness. So this man was spiritually blind. I work with international students. They seem to have everything. Many of them have lots of money. Some of them drive BMWs. I even have one international student in Kamloops that bought a house, of course, with his parents' money. And then he rented the upstairs to a Caucasian family for so much money. And then they put eight rooms in the bottom, so international students were living there. I think there were four rooms with eight students, two bathrooms, five girls. He was making money. He was an entrepreneur from China. He was a student. And I got to know that house because one couple there said, we got to move away from that place. There's fights going on for the bathroom every morning with five girls, eight people living downstairs. Well, I've met students. Two students came from China one day, came to Kamloops. They were introducing themselves. One says, I am so-and-so, and I've come to Canada to get rich. The next student said, I'm Sean from Shanghai. I've come to find God. I lost track of the student who tried to get rich, but I still know Sean because he did become a Christian, follower of Jesus, became one of my good friends, led the club in Kamloops, and is following Jesus today in Shanghai. Sean. So people come from with different reasons to this country, but spiritually they're blind. They have the latest gadgets. When I started working with international students, I didn't even know how to operate a computer. I sent emails out by hand. My wife would write the emails and send them. That's how I sent my emails. I didn't know how to put a computer. I was frightened until my son bought me an iPad, and I was forced into the 20th century. Now some students say I'm high tech. I didn't know anything about it. But these students had so much education or so much background, good background, and yet they were blind because they have a lack of purpose. Life had no meaning to them. They don't know where they're going. So they're blind as well. So that's the people don't know where they're going. They're going this way and that way. And maybe we were like that before we came to Christ. And the next point, so this is the man that was blind. The next point we have about the disciples, the second point, that's the situation of the disciples. Well, the state of the disciples. Next slide. And it's a tragic, I consider that a tragic situation as well. I'd like to read this quote from A.W. Tozer, talking about the crisis of this world. The fall of man has created a perpetual crisis. It will last until sin has been put down and Christ reigns over a redeemed and restored world. Until that time, the earth remains a disaster area and inhabitants live in a state of extraordinary emergency. To me, it's always been difficult to understand evangelical Christians who insist upon living in a crisis as if no crisis existed. They say they give they serve the Lord, but they divide their days as to leave plenty of time to loaf and enjoy the pleasures of the world as well. They're at ease while the world burns. We know what happens in California and Kamloops and BC last year when there was fires. All the focus of the government officials and leaders in those places like Williams Lake was focused on saving people's lives and getting people into safety. That is an emergency. I lived in the Kamloops for many years, and so one year in 2003, we had fires surround the whole city of Kamloops. There was only one road out of the city. It was one of the worst years. Everything was focused on saving people's lives. We know that kind of emergency. And in fact, I heard the other day some father that tried to rescue his children from a burning house, and he himself got killed or died in the attempt. So people will do that. We understand that. That's what love does. That's what concern does. But when we start doing that for Jesus, then people say we are extreme. But next slide, the state of the disciples. What did the disciples do? Wow, they look. What did they do? They started arguing. Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Let's have an argument. Let's have a theological discussion. Who sinned? Disciples are only interested in who caused the tragedy. Who caused this tragedy? Who sinned? Let's argue. Let's discuss. Let's satisfy our viewpoints. This is not the answer Jesus was looking for. It's not the answer. But that was what the church does sometimes. We as a church can become very complacent. We sometimes forget that most people are lost. You're on the buses and the trains, on the sky trains. You're in the classrooms. When I'm in the university in Langara last week in Douglas, I look at the students around me and I say, does it bother me that these students are going to hell, going to be separated from God forever unless I intervene, unless I invite them? This week, we're going to have a Chinese New Year, Asian New Year party we call Lunar New Year. We're having over 30 students come to VCAC on Ninth Street with 30 other people from the church, cooking up a big dinner and having a program, and two of those students who just became Christians are going to give their testimony. We're using every opportunity we can. They will come, and most of the students coming are Japanese, by the way, to a Chinese church, and they don't celebrate Lunar New Year, but they love parties and they love food, and they're going away. They're leaving at the end of this month, and this is their last opportunity to meet the people who showed them God's love. Some of them have become followers of Jesus. Praise Him. So what's the state of the disciples? Well, I listed some of that. Prejudice and pride. That was part of my life. I'm so much better than you. I'm kind of negative about those people that speak a different language. I don't know how to speak Japanese. I don't know how to speak Chinese. Fortunately, my wife can cook Chinese food. When they come to our place, my wife says, what part of China are they from? And she cooks food from that part of China. And she teaches Chinese people how to cook Chinese dessert. She's making two big pots of dessert for 60 people this week. One is red bean paste, red bean soup, and one is white fungus. I don't know much about these food desserts, but she does. And she's spending part of this week just cooking for the Chinese New Year. She can cook really, really well. That's why everybody likes to come to my house. So prejudice and pride. So often with human thinking, there's also ignorance. That was my problem. I found out, how many of you knew the fastest growing country now that sending students to this country is Vietnam. Vietnam. You didn't know that. Couldn't find anybody that found out that. I only found that out it's only just a few weeks ago. And some of them are in our club. They're coming to the club. They're looking for friends. They're looking to become part of the family. They miss their family. And so this gives us an opportunity to reach them. Ignorance. When I was in Kamloops, I didn't realize that all these people from China were coming. I had been a missionary before. I'd been in India. But my city was being flooded and the churches did not know. They know today. Almost every church in Kamloops is involved trying to reach those international students. I was ignorant. It was my problem. Most people, like the Olympics, most people watch things happen. A few people make things happen, and the rest of the people don't know what's happening. Ignorance. Are you ignorant of these international students? Indifference. We don't care. We're too different. They're busy with our daily pursuits. Complacency. Our church I live in Coquitlam, and our church there's a Chinese church raised $80,000 and $90,000 to sponsor refugees from Vietnam, from Syria. One family is already here. They're looking forward to two or three other families coming. They're so eager, even though they're Chinese. They're so eager to welcome people from other countries. Praise the Lord. We need to do what we can. The churches can make a difference. Indifference. We don't care. We're too busy. We're complacent. We're so busy with everything that's going on around us. And then there's a lack of faith. Can God really use me? Can He use me? Can God really provide for me? I struggled with that when I joined Operation Mobilization. When I heard they were going to India, when I wanted first to go on this mission, I said, how much are they going to pay me? They said, no, you pray and you trust God. It's never done. That was so foreign to me. I always had to have everything planned 5 years in advance where everything was going to come from. And I have to trust God. And when I got married in India, I had $10 in my pocket. How am I going to get married? When I heard hundreds of people going to come to my wedding. And Brother Buck Singh, this man that you got that book of, I says, we're going to just have a small wedding. Just maybe 10 people, 20 people. Because I figured out how much money I had, rupees in my pocket. And he looked at me and said, Bert, you trusted God to bring a truck, a $100 truck, all the way from Europe to India, and the truck is still going. You trusted God for an ocean-going ship called the Logos, and God gave you a ship. You trusted God to bring a girl from Canada to India to marry you. If God brings 1,000 people, can He feed them? Go and pray some more. I realized I offended him. And so I went under the table and I prayed. I came back out. I said, oh, Brother Buck, I want my wedding to glorify God. I want as many people to come as possible that may never even come to church. He said, that's better. We'll cook the food. The church will cook the food, and you paid me on the day of the wedding for the food. I said, okay. So the day of the wedding came. Fortunately, my parents came, but I still had $10. They came with some money. But the people of India did not know what to give us. And poor people gave that day cash. And when we counted all the cash from the people from India, it was over $600. And the food cost $150. We're talking about 1971. The food cost $150. I was rich. I said, why didn't I invite more people to the wedding? And, we can't. God is so good. God is so great. And, many times I've lacked faith in what I was doing. But God has been faithful. Some Chinese doctor, he said, Bert, when are you coming to Vancouver? You trained someone to take your place in Kamloops 8 years ago, 9 years ago. He said, when are you coming to Vancouver? I says, I can't. Cost too much money. Vancouver is a little costlier than Kamloops. He said, Bert. I says, what are you looking for? I said, I'm looking for the right house at the right price. He said, let me think about it. And he came back to me a couple of weeks later and said, Bert, I have a house in Port Coquitlam. You can have it just if you pay the taxes, $350 a month. I said, what? Is that per day or per week? He said, no. He says, $350, just pay the taxes. Three-bedroom bungalow in the heart of Port Coquitlam. Wow. I took it. That was God's answer to us. That's how we started the ministry in Vancouver. God provided that place. That was a miracle. Students wondered, the students that were paying $600 for a room, we had a house for $350 with three bedrooms and a big yard and a garden and everything. They said, how can we move here? So we did have a Chinese girl live with us for a while, for a year, from Kamloops. She said, I'm coming to Vancouver too. I said, great, welcome to Vancouver. No, she said, I'm coming to move in your house. I said, really? I said, why? She said, I hate cooking. Ah, she knew what my wife was good at. And she came and lived with us for a homestay for $500 a month. She thought it was a great bargain. And that covered the rent of the house. Well, what is your biggest fear? What is your barrier? Next slide. What is your fear this morning of going to someone else and sharing the gospel? Next slide. What is your reason for not sharing the gospel? What will you do to overcome this barrier? What's your fear? Afraid what people will say, afraid that you don't have the answer to something, afraid that, you know, are you afraid to talk to strangers? I talk to strangers every week. Sometimes it's in the swimming pool. In the Hyde Creek Community Center, where I go swimming, I sit in the hot tub. People can't say they don't have time there. And so I meet these Asians there, and I ask them questions, and I share with them. And then I tell them that I'm going to Westwood Alliance Church in Coquitlam. And one day I came to the church, and the lady comes rushing up to me and says, I'm so-and-so, she says, I'm a new person, but I recognize you. I said, how can you recognize? She said, you invited me here. I said, where? In the hot tub. Oh, I couldn't recognize her. She was dressed differently in the hot tub. And she had come to the church just because I had been in the hot tub to invite her. The pastor was quite impressed. So how will you overcome your barriers? Share the good news. Let's go on to the last part of my message this morning. The last part is the solution of Jesus. What is the solution of Jesus? Look at these verses there. All of us must quickly carry out the task assigned us by the one who sent me, because there is little time left before the night falls and all work comes to an end. Another translation says, so as long as the daytime lasts, we must practice the works of my sender. The night approached when no one should be able to work. Another one from the message, look instead for what God can do. We need to be energetically at work for the one who sent me here, working while the sun shines. When the night falls, the work day is over. Jesus is giving us three challenges from that one verse. This is the solution to reach that blind man and the blind people of our world, people around us. This is the solution, brothers and sisters. This is the heartbeat. This is what he's telling disciples. Forget about your argument. You've missed the point. This happened that the work of God might be manifest. Let's go to the first part of the solution. Just covering them very briefly this morning. I'm coming back, by the way, in March, if the pastor lets me. So you can hear more of my stories. Next slide, the solution. 3 points, very quickly. Divine compulsion. We must. Sharing the good news is the natural overflow of our religion. We have received good news, and we long to tell it to others. Our religion is like joy we cannot suppress or contain. It bubbles over like the brimming cup. The reason and passion of sharing the good news is that a great and wonderful thing is coming to our lives in the love of God through Jesus. We can find no rest till we tell the world. Thus, sharing the good news is not a duty in any sense, but a sheer inevitable joy. What do you think happened to me in India when this girl from Canada said, I'm coming to India to marry you? Did I keep it to myself? Nobody knew. I'm thousands of miles away from home. I'm there with my brothers and sisters in that church. I had to tell everyone. I was shouting. It was just like the Canucks won a hockey. It was much more wonderful than that. Here was a girl actually that said yes, she was going to come and marry me. Everybody had to know about it. Isn't Jesus more important? Isn't the new life that we have more important than anything in the world? is more important than the lottery, winning the lottery, or something else great happening in your life? Divine compulsion. We must. That is the words of Jesus. Jesus felt these needs in his gut. This is not superficial concern. He felt the limb of the cripple, the hurt of the disease, the loneliness of the leper, the shame of the sinners. And once he felt their hurts, he couldn't help but heal their hurts. He could forget his own needs. When I see the needs of international students, you know, 70% of them go back to China or wherever they come from, Japan, and they have never been to a church. They have never been to a Canadian home. Why? You know, I tell you guys one reason. I've been doing this for 17 years. I know the reason. Nobody invited them. Nobody invited them. That is the main reason. Because every international student would come to a church when there's food, when we have the Alpha program. I have a testimony right here of this girl from Japan that's going to share her story this Friday. I wish she could be here today, but she's going through a class getting ready to get baptized in Vancouver Chinese Alliance Church. She said, the reason I came to the Alpha program, she said, because there was free food. And she was bringing her friends. The reason people come to our clubs and universities, because churches like Port Moody Pacific Grace, churches like Burnaby Pacific Grace, people like Herbert and Karen Shim that opened their home to four international students that are living there from China, from Korea, and from Panama. They go there to the Douglas and SFU and bring the food. And the students will say when they get baptized or get saved, I came here because I heard there was a free meal. Would you guys help us? Would some of you want to bring a meal? That is what it takes to bring these university students to Jesus Christ. That's all it takes. Food. Welcoming them. Next slide. We must. Jesus said we must. We must see the world with Christ's eyes. We must think with his mind. Divine compulsion. It's not just doing it if you feel like it, if you have some time, extra time. But we must do it no matter, even if it hurts us, if it costs us, if we sacrifice. Jesus didn't say, I will go to the cross if I feel like it, if it feels good, if it makes me happy. No, he says, not my will, but your will be done. Secondly, divine commission. Divine commission. We must do the work of him who sent me. As the Father sent me, I'm sending you. Who is sending us? Vancouver Pacific Grace Church? ISMC? No, we're sent by the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. We're sent by God himself as his ambassadors. And you may be the only person that person ever meets that's a Christian on the bus, on the train, or at the university. I meet international students everywhere I go. If I don't meet them, I meet new immigrants, people who have just come here. And I ask them where they're from, and they say, I'm from Syria, I'm from Iran, I'm from Afghanistan. I was in a coffee shop the other day waiting for my wife's eye appointment. She doesn't get those eye treatments, she might go blind with one eye. So I have to sit there in Tim Hortons. Bad place to sit, right across from the medical place. But I'd start talking to a man. How long have you been here? Where do you come from? He says, I'm from Afghanistan. I'm from Afghanistan. I came here. He's my age. He said, I came here with my four kids and my wife. And he started talking to me. And I said, you know, and then I thought, I think I have something in the car that's your language. I went back to the car and got a Farsi New Testament, and I got a Jesus video, and boy, his face just lit up. He was so happy to receive stuff in his own language. I carried right in the back of my car. My car is my library. We must do his work. We're doing the work of him who sent me. Last point. See, divine conviction. Night is coming when no one can work. This could be my last year. How long will I have strength and health to do what I'm doing? I'm planning to drive across Canada this year to Nova Scotia with my wife in May and June. 6,000 kilometers. Then in the fall, I'm hoping to visit China and Singapore and India and Japan and Korea. Mostly to visit people, students that have gone back to their countries. And to share the gospel with them. That might be the last year I can do that. The time is short. The students we work with are only here sometimes for one semester, 1 year, at the most 4 years. Then they're gone. Jesus only had 3 years with his disciples. He knew his time was short. Everything he had was poured into those 12 people who would be his representatives when he left. The opportunities we have are not tomorrow but today, and you think, oh, you're young people, you'll live forever. Just think about that 15-year-old boy that died on the street of Broadway. Just think about that Brazilian little boy that crossed the street in Burnaby and was killed, international student. Yes, time is so short. Time is so short. We don't know what time we have and how long we have. But my time is short too. It's gone. I just give you two stories, two illustrations to close. And may God touch you through that. I didn't know what I was doing when I went to university. I didn't know what I was doing, but I wanted to be friends. I know that they're looking for friends. So I first went to the university, and there's the Tim Hortons shop, and I sat there, and there was a girl there, and she looked like she's Asian. I said, "Where are you from?" She says, "I am from Japan. I'm Junko." She said, "Who are you?" I said, "I'm Bert. I'm just starting to work with international students. This is my first day." She said, "Great, then you can help me." I said, "You can help you?" "Yeah," she said, "I have a big problem. I went into a Canadian home. I thought it was a great home." She said, "But this lady has two boyfriends, and they fight over her, and she has a teenage daughter who's into parties and noise." And she said, "I wanted to be in a quiet home, and now I can't stand it any longer. This is the worst place. I need to study." And she said, I said, "What are you going to do?" She said, "I'm going to move." I said, "Where?" At first I said, "Well, when?" She said, "This week, because I'm going to Japan, and then when I get back from Japan, I want to be in my new place." So just to make a long story short, I said, "Where are you going to move?" She said, "Your place." I said, "My place? Really?" "Yeah," she said. "I want to move to your place." I said, "You're coming in my car right now. We're going to talk to my wife." And the next day, she was in my home. She was in my home. And she became our first Japanese daughter. And she never became a Christian for the 3 or 4 years that we had her in our home. But you know, when she went back to Japan, she went to a new place. And long story short, she heard about a church, so English-speaking church in Japan, that she could keep her up her English. And they were having an Alpha program going. And she joined that. And she said, "I'm not going to that church to become a Christian. I'm just going for the Alpha and to learn English." And a few months later, she says, "I am now a follower of Jesus, all because of you. I blame you. You showed me God's love." So that happened. And I still have contact with that girl. When we go to Japan, we visit her. She's part of my family, Junko. What will it take for you? In this little book, what will it take to change the world? There's a story that always haunts me. And it's a story of a steamer, of a boat that's on Lake Erie that had passengers on it. And the steamer caught fire and headed at once for the nearest land. And all was wild confusion of men and women struggle for means of escape. And in the crowd was a California gold miner. He fastened his belt containing his gold securely around his waist. He was preparing to try to swim ashore. And just then a little sweet-faced girl in the crowd touched his hand and looked up beseechingly into his face and said, "Won't you please save me? I have no papa here to save me. Won't you please?" What could he do? He gave the belt of gold that met such a hard struggle one swift glance. But the girl's soft touch on his hand and that face and voice strangely affected him. He could not save both, which all kinds of thoughts raced through his mind. Then he dropped the gold and took the child and made the plunge. And by they reached land, utterly exhausted, and lay unconscious. As his eyes opened, the child he had saved was standing over him, with tears of gratitude flooding her eyes. And a human life never seemed quite so precious. He had lost his goal in his years of toil, but he saved a life. And in saving it, he found a new life springing up within him. We close our time together. I don't have time for my last points. They're on this PowerPoint. You can look at them. But what concerns me most? What lessons have I learned in 50 years? People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Actions speak louder than words. Don't tell me who you are. Show me. That's what we might need to do before we can preach the gospel to people around us, to strangers. The one lost sheep is worth more than the 99. The greatest joy and contentment and satisfaction is catching the fish. Jesus said, "I have food to eat that you know nothing about." Disciples were so concerned about food in John chapter 4. Jesus was concerned about that woman at the well who opened her life to Jesus. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, these words, "I must do the work of him who sent me. The night is coming when no man can work."